I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, which one? Who knows? There are many galaxies. Where are we? We don't know. But from the center of some galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, currently presenting Other Center. And this is our episode, Cues of the Other. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Napzok.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are very happy to be here taking questions. We got a great spread of questions today. We've got one kind of a little bit heavier, complex, about careers, about choices kind of question. And then we have two zippy, fun, weird little questions. And we really appreciate that you all ask us lots of different kinds of questions. Before we get to see if we have some A's to your Q's, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, your Android, your Kindle, or your MP3 player. Mm-hmm. I just thought we should start delivering these more dramatically to shake it up. Anyway, Ken, you've got a recommendation.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, remember we used to recommend the same Space Galaxy book for a month straight? We're doing that now because this book seems to That'd be real popular with the Four Center, other Center listeners. And I'm going to check it out myself. It is A History of the World in Six Glasses by Tom Standage. And it is very popular. I'm going to find out why. I picked it at random, but here we are recommending it still. And you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. Help yourself and help the show.
That is a great slogan. So you know what, Ken, I'm going to have you keep going. We have a current ask. Do you want to handle our ask?
Hey, it would really help, especially during this other center era, which we understand we're pre-recording. The world in terms of SAG could have changed by the time this episode is released. We hope so. Crossing our fingers that that's the truth and we all can laugh at this. But in the other center era in particular, it would really help if you would consider going to Apple Podcasts. You can go to Spotify, anywhere where you're listening to podcasts, and they have a rating. Give us a rating. Give us a review. But it really helps on Apple Podcasts to keep us vibrant and buoyant in these podcast, uncertain podcast times. So consider doing that. Leave a good review. And, you know, I'll just say this. If you don't currently like the product, you don't need to review it.
Free yourself. You can pause and come back. Don't I hope there's nobody just hate listening to the other center episodes. I understand if people are like, I'm here for Star Wars, it was nice, but I got to take a break. I understand, but I really hope there's nobody like, oh I hate this. Yeah, so but I'm listening all the way through to the end.
Yeah, there you go. We'd love to have you consider doing that. That is our ask.
A very good ask. Vibrant and buoyant. If anybody wants to just steal Ken's words and use that as a review, that'd be great.
Vibrant's one of my favorite words. I use vibrant a lot. It's one of those things. I just love it, right? It's just vibrant. It sounds like it what it means. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good word. Jennifer, do you have any favorite words?
Oh, ecstatic.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, like ecstatic. There was another word I just came across. I was like, I like that word. I'm going to incorporate that word more.
Okay. Yeah, I can't wait to hear.
I can't think of what it was.
Yeah. I'm all about cathartic and luminous. Anyway, that's not one of our questions.
Oh, yeah. Both of those. Yes.
They're good. They're just real handy. Cathartic in particular. I can't describe anything without wanting it to be cathartic. Let's see if the questions are cathartic today. This first comes to us from the food in my beard, the food in my beard. I'm just going to say that whole thing like it is Dan's actual name. Dan, correct, Ken?
Dan Whalen. He's got the blog and his brand, and he's written a ton of great cookbooks. The food in my beard. Also a Four Center guest way back in the day. It's been a while now. We got to get Dan back on when the times allow. But yeah, Dan indeed.
Yeah, and really appreciated, particularly sometimes in live streams where we've gone off on food tangents, that we've got some expertise from Dan. Mm-hmm. So Dan is asking a question about something he is experiencing in his field of expertise, and we shall translate it to whatever ours might be. How do you balance artistic integrity versus, quote, playing the game in your art and work? I think about this a lot and try to have a triangle with making money on one point, doing what I know will be popular on one point, and following my passion on the third. This is a great question. That is a great triangle. I want to start with this one question because there's a lot to be answered within this, but I'm very curious, Jennifer and Ken's take. The triangle point of doing what I know will be popular. I think sometimes that's really clear of people like this. If I do this, it'll go well. But one thing that I'm always fascinated by, depending on the field you're in, is sometimes that one can actually be hard to figure out. And I remember at different points in artistic conversations having or artistic careers, having conversations with friends where you're like, well, why don't you just give in? Why don't you just sell out? And I'll be like, I'm trying. I can't figure out how to sell out. I can't figure out that triangle, that popular point. So, Jennifer, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like in all of your various creative adventures, do you feel like you always know what would be popular if you were willing to do it more? Or is it sometimes a mystery?
I thought that I knew what that was. I don't feel like I do anymore. I think, oh, this one's going to hit with people. People are going to get it, or they're going to relate to it. And then it doesn't. So I the only thing I know for me personally, if I were to sell out, play the game, would be to just sexify it up. If I wore really sexy outfits and talked about Star Wars, I probably would get some views. Maybe not so much now because I'm older, but when I was but when I was younger, that would have been my way of selling out for me personally. Just because it's not like some people are naturally, that's like their personality. And when they do it, that's like, that's authentic to them. Yeah. And I think that's incredible. But for me, it wouldn't be authentic to me. So that's why I feel like it would be selling out. But there are people who are able to do that, and it's great. But I can't, because I'm just a big dork. So, and also people expect that of me more too, because I'm like Latina. I mean, really, if I really want to sell out, go down the spicy tamale type thing that people were trying to like put that label, like people try to put on me, especially when I was an actor, you know, the Salma Hayek, the Jennifer Lopez, you're from the streets, you know, the gangbanger's girlfriend. You talk tough, like that kind of thing would be me selling out. So
that makes a lot of sense. Yes. It would be fascinating to see you do a parody of that. Of here's normal Furby coverage, here's spicy tamale Furby coverage.
I don't even know if I could do it. But that's when I question my acting abilities. I'm like, I don't even know, because I tried. I tried. I did have some roles, and you know.
That's so fun.
No, I think it is a tribute to you that what is powerful about the work that you do is it is authentic. And even with somebody who has the skills to be an actor, it's clear that you're just like, that's not a role I want to take on. Powerful.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But J-Lo can do it. You know, J-Lo, that is her authentic self, being the sexy, like celebrity A-lister. Like, she just is that. And that's who she is. I love it.
Yeah.
celebrate that.
So how about you, Ken? Are you going to start doing some low cut videos to be popular?
Yep. But I'm wearing some very tight jeans in the next video I'm doing. Yeah.
And I love on camera.
I really respect your clarity of words there, Jed, of just, you know, there's others that it works. That's who they are. That's their brand. That's their comfort level. That's not yours. That's what that is about. I think it's a well struck balance there. Yeah. This is a great question, because we're living this. We're in this. And part of my depression is trying to figure out this triangle. This is a great idea. I got to figure out my triangle here. And artistic integrity versus playing a game. It's tough. And I'll start big, where I definitely know I've mentioned this because it's big in my life. I'm a huge Conan O'Brien fan. I just love it. And I highly recommend you all check out his podcast. It's absolutely amazing. And I think he's a hero and someone who takes care of those around him. And there's all these great things to say. I really, really studied that book and that era of him on The Tonight Show and the disaster that was that whole kind of drama. And there's so much finger pointing that should be at the network, and so much should be on Jay and his inability to maybe give it up and all those kind of things. There's a part of what happened that was the reality of Conan stayed true to who he was, and it wasn't working in terms of network ratings and money and that advertisers and that kind of thing. And there was at one point an argument that could have been made, and I'm trying to thread a needle here too, of if you just played the game a little bit, the question of Jay coming back wouldn't have been a problem, because you would have been killing it. But there was a little bit of artistic stubbornness that I think emerged. And I took a big lesson from that, because he's also his speech at the end. There's so many. He's an inspirational person. Mm-hmm. And I still watch his podcast to this day when I can. Mm-hmm. More. I want to be clear about that. But I carry that lesson with me, because I don't know sometimes. I sometimes want to adapt a little bit to what's more popular, but then it doesn't feel right to me, you know. There's certain skill sets that I don't have that other people do have, and some of it is that influencer culture, just casually, you know, putting up a phone in your car and filming a video. I can't help but kind of perform and edit it up, and then therefore it's not as personal as some other folks. I am a little bit more of an old school broadcaster, and that's who I am. And so I have to find the balance and play the game. And then there's the playing the game of the algorithms. Is your thumbnail this? Is your thumbnail, you know, and that changes. I was in the green room hearing all the tips on how to post your clips of stand-up clips online. And then the conversation ended with, well, then it changes every 3 months anyway. So all that stuff's a problem. But yeah, I'm struggling with it, and we're going to keep discussing this more. But that's my big opening statement, Joseph, is I don't know. I'm trying to form that triangle so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you have any time in your creative life where you feel like you know you knew what the thing was, like Jennifer's story of this is what I could have done, but you didn't want to do it?
Yes. Yeah. It emerged post Collider. Either the first time I was laid off in 2018 when I did try to do some stuff and did, like, me going into Twitch streaming and now I stream video games on YouTube was a, well, I guess I can do this thing. And I still enjoy it. Right. I don't do it as much. I moved off of Twitch just to move everything to my YouTube channel. But when I hang out and play a video game, and sometimes I do it with friends online, sometimes with myself in the chat, it is fun. I really enjoy it. And so that became right. But if I could have started catnapsuck.com started the website, but really relaunched my YouTube channel, because I'd had one since like 2007, but done Ken Napsuck, the movie news guy, and I could have done reactions. I could have done trailer break. I could have all those things. So I saw other people doing it. I hate that stuff. and there's people just like you're saying, Jen, there's people I know personally who do it and do it well. I don't think trailer reactions or movie reactions lead to insightful commentary, but that's maybe my take, and that's take that with a grain of salt. I think it dumbs down the conversations around these movies, but I know people buying houses off of it. Mm-hmm. And I that was a point where I was like, me and my buddy Mark Riley would always talk about this of he tried it. He tried to do reactions, and he goes, it's not me. It's not me. You have to find that. It's a hard line to find, but that was a moment where I remember kind of putting my foot down and said, I want out of that kind of it, that kind of side of the stuff.
Yeah. I think these are some really great distinctions being made between something you just can't do because it is inauthentic, and on the surface, it's what you should do, but it probably won't work because everybody will be able to sense that you hate it, right? Right. So there's that. And then there's that stretching a little bit to this isn't ideal for me, but it would be better. Like for many years here on 4Center, we did the Data Bank Brawl episodes, which I really like and am really proud of. But I kind of got to a point where we stopped doing them when the pandemic began because I thought it was going to be really hard to do not in person.
Right.
And I still believe that. But I also, a couple of people have had comments lately about how much they like them, which I really, really appreciate. But I also just feel like we did it a lot, and I feel like we kind of did that. But it isn't inauthentic. It's not selling my soul. But if somebody was like, 4Center is going to take off entirely if you do 3 Data Bank Brawls a week, like, that's not, you know, that's not doing something inauthentic, but it's not quite where my heart is right now. I think that's can be kind of hard about it, is there those different levels from, that's just not going to work because it's not authentic, too. That's not really where my passion is right now. Which I think Food in My Beard is so smart to have, like, one of those be passion. What you truly want to do is one of those, those triangle points in figuring out, you know, the triangle is so powerful and so great, but sometimes it can be hard to be like, which one does it go on? When I was doing the Minnesota Fringe Festival for many years, usually doing like one act plays, sometimes it'd be a one person show, sometimes it'd be a, you know, 4 or 5 person cast, but you know, I would write them and I would produce them and act in them, and was very lucky to be successful, and it was a good way to make a chunk of good cash when it comes to theater, because I built up an audience specifically there. And sometimes people, other people in the community would frankly be jerks about it. And comedies were more popular because it's the summer and people want to see something fun. And sometimes I'd get bagged about that, of people saying, well, there are no ideas here because it's comedy. And like, there were, then you got a comedy bias. But other times people would do the most kind of obscure, esoteric, personal passion projects and then be really upset that people weren't there. And I would be like, I really understand, but here's what I do. At the fringe, I have never put on a show that I didn't absolutely believe in. Mm. But often I'd have three ideas and I'd go, out of these three ideas that I'm lucky to love, which am I going to do? Because that one, not many people are going to show up to. And I often had a hard time having this conversation. So because people would be go like, oh, you sold out. I'm like, no, out of my three options that I loved equally, I picked the one that would fulfill the goal of the show and the business. I will love the show and it will go well for the business. And I think that's what I hear when you talk about Conan O'Brien of like, I don't know this story, so you'll have to tell me. I assume nobody was asking him to just be Jay Leno, right? And do the headlines, right?
Correct.
But people were asking him to pick the version of Conan that's still Conan that is maybe a little bit friendlier to these specific dumb needs.
And it was talked about a lot, right? It was a little bit of before the job and on the job. And hey, the numbers are showing this ain't working. And I think that's what you're talking about too. And sometimes I have the, you know, the thing where I look at my numbers and I go, well, this ain't working. What is it about me? You know, I want to start there before I start blaming. It's easy to blame a lot of other, you know, the one thing that's not a blame. I think the truth is just getting the word out there and the broken social media these days. But
yeah, that's huge. I mean, all of this is, you know, for me, so much of this is broken social media now of what's going on. Jennifer, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Have you felt like you've had points where you feel like, I know what I like, and within that collection of things I like, I'm going to try to pick the one that I think will hit the hardest?
I think the challenge is, how stubborn do you want to be? Which you have to kind of know, read the room of what is going on, how are people consuming things in any type of art form specifically. I just came across this video today of this fashion designer. He died, unfortunately, Virgil Abloh. And he was talking about, he showed this crushed paint can. And he was like, depending on where this paint can is how you're going to view its value. If I put this crushed paint can in an art gallery on a pedestal in a big white room, you're going to suddenly revere the paint can as being an object of art, right? Something special. If you see it in a garage shoved to the side, you're going to think it's trash. And that really made me think about how we are presenting our product, ourselves, right? Your artwork and how it, that can, and I think a lot of times, especially for video creators, we tried so hard, we spent all these hours, and can I have the same thing as you? I come from this background of like wanting to perform, right? And like being professional on camera. And I want to come across as like knowing my stuff and doing my research. But on TikTok, people are literally just talking in their cars about whatever for 5 minutes, and they have 100,000 views. And that requires a level of just like, I don't know, of something to where I'm not comfortable with yet, but I'm reading the room and I'm seeing that I'm not going to be able to share what I want to share if I don't adapt to how people are consuming content. And it's really hard when you're an artist and you have a vision and you have a certain passion, but sometimes you got to be the Trojan horse, right? And play the game a little bit and then get to do what you want.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. I think, I know it has come up in our conversations before, both on air and off. I think it's also, it's so important to ask, do I actually want this or am I just chasing something shiny? Because you get exhausted, you need money, the general you here, exhausted, you need money, and you see somebody else just doing something that's working, and you're just like, oh, do I want that? But then you look at it and go like, yeah, but we all want success, but do we want to get it in that way? Or even though it's success, like the actual thing that people are getting, do you want that? If, you know... like I feel with the views on TikTok, I know for some people it makes them, you know, money and success. But I think a lot of people have a bonkers number of views that doesn't translate to money or followers on other social media or any sort of industry deals. So I always think it's just really, really important to ask yourself what you want, which is another thing that's so great about this triangle, because it's saying, here are the three things I need, you know? And so now I know I'm making conscious decisions, but that's one of the other things I talk to people about with the Fringe Festival is like, what do you want? Do you want to do the show that you truly believe in? And maybe it will become a hit, but it might be 15 people per show and it'll be kind of a bummer on the audience side, but it's utterly fulfilling to you. You can make that choice, but if your goal is to have the theater full every time, think about something truthful and honest that you think will be more popular. I think being cognizant of what am I valuing it at this moment? What is success to me in this project, this specific project? What am I shooting for? What is success with this one is really important.
No, that's well said. And just reevaluating that triangle too about what your passions might have been. That there might have been a spot where talk about movie news every week was what I wanted to do, right? And that changed, and I had to acknowledge it and not fight it. And yeah, it can get scary. There's some, you know, focuses and passions changing for me now, even in my life. And one of my biggest mistakes, I've joked about it before, but like I launched that baseball podcast network about 2 years ago, some of Brian Ward's best art he's ever done for any show. Love it. And I got 4 episodes in, was like this. I did this because I thought it could make me money. I didn't really truly evaluate my time and my relationship to baseball right now. And this was a failure, and I had to be okay with that. And it maybe if I still own the art, it might come back one day. But yeah, that was a moment where I was like, I think I chased what I saw other people had.
Jennifer, do you feel like you have had a moment where you started something and then realized this isn't actually what I want?
Yes. I think over the years making content, it really is very difficult because there's going to be times where your videos hit and times when they don't, where you hear crickets, you might have spent a long time on the video, and you have to be able to weather that and keep going and keep trying. And what would happen was I would take that as indicative of, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, or this is so frustrating and nobody even cares, and just taking it really personally. And as we all know, like when you're on social media, like you're just scrolling and maybe you don't have time for it. You like it, you wish it well, but you'll come back to it another time. Right. So it's just, you have to be really self-driven. And that's been my challenge with online content is to have that consistency, because that's what we're all looking for. That's why my favorite creators, they are consistently posting, and I may not see every one of their videos, every one of their posts, but I feel like I have that parasocial relationship with them. Right. And I think that those people generally started off doing whatever they wanted to do passionately. They were passionate about their thing. And then they found a community. They cultivated a community and found their audience from doing their passion. So it is possible.
No, that's great. I think for myself, final thought on this is I want to put this in some creative thing sometime, but I have this idea of my I existed box of if I had a curated literal physical box that I could put, you know, art of any kind, you know, in it. What out of what I've done do I want to point at is this is the mark I made, you know? And that, at least for some of the kind of creative things that I want to do, sometimes helps me find true north on what I want to do. And in particular, I think I love comedy, and I love comedy for entertainment's sake. I think it has true value to just stand in front of somebody or write something, and like, it doesn't have any great meaning. It's not going to change the world, but it's funny and it makes people laugh. For a while I was finding a little bit more success doing, you know, kind of stand-up stuff that relied a lot on pop culture. And I leaned into it a little bit because it was going well. And I liked making jokes about Doctor Who and Star Wars and all that. But I didn't want to put it in my I existed box because it felt really temporary. It felt really of the moment of like, this joke about the 11th Doctor is going to be kind of done in 2 years when he's not the 11th Doctor anymore. It felt so temporary to me that it wasn't compared to like other things that I've written or done. Like I didn't want to put it in my I existed box. Ken, does that make any sense to you? Does that translate to the way you think about things at all?
Yeah, a little bit of just, yeah, of what is me. Yeah, sometimes I go to what is me at the time. What is my I exist box at the time? Changes. And then, yeah, as long as you don't hide what's really there. I had a great conversation with our pal, Joe Starr, who was talking about an early, when he moved to LA and started doing stand-up. He was, Joe always will be a nerd through and through, but he hid it. He hid that part. That's different from what you're talking about. You're talking about what is the approach to comedy. But yeah, he was on a podcast, Jackie Cation's podcast, and he talked about how he was asked a question about Transformers and he knew the answer and he pretended not to. And it went away. I went, well, that's not who I am. Like, why did I do that? Versus, you know, hey, yeah, you're right. Maybe I have a very specific set of references in some old stand-up sets that definitely don't last. So, I'm there with you on that approach.
Find
balance.
And I'm not, I mean, I still have, comedy albums that I'm proud of that I would like people to buy on Bandcamp. I'm not disparaging the art. I think it's just, I was getting to the Food in My Beard's question about, you know, balancing what you truly want, popular versus passion. And I think when I look at the art that I love, almost all the art I love has some timeless quality. All art is of its day. You know, look at Luke's hair. But there's some things that sort of like resonate and aren't just responsive to the moment. And I think that's powerful to me too, because that's something that's also going on in all of this social media stuff, in the TikTok of like, so much of it is responsive entirely to the moment, which I think has value, but it doesn't have permanence.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, check my short tomorrow, my YouTube short where I do the ice bucket challenge.
Right. And that's something that I wrestle with. Any final thoughts on this topic, Jennifer?
No, boy. But it is interesting when I look back on the things that I'm proudest of. They do have a lot of hits, views, whatever. But it's because I was so driven by an idea. And it just was something that other people connected with. And there's something that feels so good about being able to create something and have other people, whether, you know, what their laugh or they are, well, yes, you make a great point. It's just, for me, it's about the human connection that I long for. And that's why I like to make art.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Ken, any final thoughts on this one?
I'm going to write down my triangle. I'm going to try to figure it out in a little bit more detail and try to keep my head up. That's where I'm at right now. I've been down and out, almost just bottom line depressed as I tried some things I've been really passionate about, but I need those things to work or I don't get to do them anymore. And what's the balance? What's the sellout point? What's the triangle? So Dan, thanks for this thoughtful question. And again, folks, check out thefoodinmybeard.com for Dan's work.
Yeah, Dan. And if you want to follow up to your own question, I'm very curious about how all this works in your industry and what kind of choices that you need to make to fulfill the vision of the triangle. Yeah, I think my final thought is I give a lot of thought to how can I consolidate the triangle?
Yeah,
so, very true. I'm doing as many things at once as possible. That is a great question. Thank you for all the support. Obviously, everybody listening and sending in questions, obviously, Force Center and Other Center is something that I am really, really proud of. And I would put almost any episode in my I existed box, even the ones where we get predictions wildly wrong about movies that are, you know, 8 years old now.
Some we get close to being right.
Some we do. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with two zippy little fun questions back in a moment.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back with more Cues of the Other. We got two fun ones. This one comes to us from Maddie Gunner. Maddie says, if you could domesticate any animal and have it as a loving fur or feathered, scaled friend, what would you choose? I will just jump on this one because it's, hey, I'd like to come up with something surprising, but it's squirrels. I absolutely do love squirrels. Without doubt or hesitation, I would love it if I had a little squirrel friend. I could build them a little house. They could live in my apartment. I could take care of their needs. But then they'd be kind of like my little friend, my little familiar. And they would just like, you know, if I gave a call and they were up for it, they would scamper over and they'd, you know, ride my shoulder and I'd take a walk down Hollywood Boulevard. That would be great. Maybe give them a little collar with their name on it. Oh, man, it'd be great. I would love a little squirrel friend. Ken, you do have little friends. Little loving fur friends, dogs. What would you have as an animal companion if you could domesticate any animal?
There's two choices, and both probably equally as impossible. I love meerkats. It's the first stop at the LA Zoo. Go to the LA Zoo. The meerkats. I love little furry creatures like that. I used to have some ferrets back in the day, and they're it's similar enough. But I don't know. The security system meerkats have it for their community. If one watches with the others relax and just the little faces and paws, and they're like guarding the king in England. They're not, you can't push them off their mission. They're just sitting there in front of them for the longest time when they're out there. And the last time I went by myself to do some riding at the zoo, and one of the meerkats just was on his back, legs just akimbo, just taking in the sun, leaning on the side of the hill while another one watched. And I was like, that's community right there. That's community. So I don't know if I could have a meerkat. The other one is otters. Also similar to ferrets in a lot of ways. And Grace and I will call them sea chihuahuas. I just obsessed with them. Love them. They're so smart, and again, another part of the zoo I go to, and Grace and I actually adopted one through their little zoo adoption support program. And I don't know which one. I don't go there and like talk to Ollie the Otter. I just love it. And especially when you get them and they're active one time we were at the zoo, we were like at the part where you can kind of see them and they were like swimming up to the water in the window and we're like, oh, they're cute. And then the zookeeper came and like dumped a bunch of like murdered fish and watched these otters just rip apart the fish. It was a different reality, but even that. Yeah. So it's probably one of the reasons I couldn't domesticate them, but I would swim with the otters.
Yeah, that sounds like a great horror movie.
With the otters.
And I also like that the theme in your life of protection and security runs through with the meerkats. A community of security guards watching over one another.
The security director going, we should take notes. Yeah.
I'll take first watch.
Yeah.
How about you, Jennifer? What animal would you domesticate?
Wait, I want to know, Ken, you really had a ferret?
Past relationship. Yeah. I inherited two and then we got one together. Yeah. I think in total four. California, I don't know the numbers now, but California where they're illegal.
Yes. Has
the highest ferret ownership.
Really? Yeah. I wanted one. I used to get subscribed to, I think Ferret Magazine. So badly, but they're difficult, right?
They're difficult. The smell for us wasn't a problem. Especially you can bathe ferrets. The ability to hide and they get fixated and they will still and hide like the same item, no matter where you hide it, unless you make it actually impossible to do that. And then one of the ferrets liked me, but like would every day scratch the same part of my ankle, make it bleed. But outside of that, they're adorable. They are. They're spirited animals. I love them.
Reopen the same wound, like exes sometimes do. Yeah.
Oh no. Well, I see a theme. We all like cute creatures. And so in keeping with that theme, I would like a pygmy marmoset.
Oh, yeah.
They're known as the pocket monkey. They're about 5 to 6 inches tall, but they do have a long tail. They live in the rainforest in South America. And I can stick it in my pocket, have it on my shoulder, like you're saying, Joseph, with your squirrel, little collar. But here's where things get interesting. I really started thinking about this. I was like, what if the animal is not only domesticated, but also can talk? Then we open up a whole other can of worms, so to speak. I would choose an axolotl who could talk to me, or even a praying mantis, which could kind of be like my Jiminy Cricket and put it on my shoulder because they seem so smart.
Yeah.
Or a squirrel monkey. I just feel like any talking animal, I'd take any of them.
I Googled the pocket monkey. That is adorable.
Right?
That is so adorable. Yeah, just clinging to the fingers. You could have one on each finger. My Lord.
Wait.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. You're taking me back. Pocket monkey. Okay, sorry. I'm going to look this up. So we had a coworker. This is years ago, back when I was a regular security guard. And at one point, we made a joke. I think he was trying to explain what these were. And he called them a thumb monkey. And that became his nickname, where even if his name was John, if I saw, it is. And if I saw him today, I would be like, the monkey, what's up? Like that was his nickname, whether he wanted it or not, because he was trying to explain these pocket monkeys. That's amazing. God, you just took me back then. That's amazing.
There is a book on Amazon called Finger Monkey. Finger Monkey Guide for Novice, the complete guide on caring, feeding, housing, breeding, and training finger monkeys as pets.
What?
1-star review.
What?
1-star.
Did not do good.
They should not be pets. That's part of the problem.
I think that's probably why it has 1-star of like, don't.
I can't show. I'm sure Grace knows these exist, but if she sees this, we might own 3 by Friday.
Hey, you got more than 3 fingers, so fill them up. Fill them up.
Yeah.
I do sometimes my other option for not a small character is I get to walk into Griffith Park, about 20-minute walk from my apartment. And there's a picnic bench I sit at sometimes and Sarah will kindly take a photo of me and I make the joke of that none of the bears came to my picnic. So I would love it if there was a bear friend that lived in Griffith Park and I could just go and hang out and
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Fist bump the bear, have a picnic, whatever. Mm-hmm. Chat.
Brag on its back.
Yep. Yep. See how its day is going. You know, any funny food it found in the trash, you know, that kind of thing.
What jug band are you part of?
You know? maybe the bear would have a finger monkey. Who knows?
Right.
All right. That is our strange menagerie. Thank you, Maddie, for that question. And we've been talking all week about the shattered reality of current social media bumming us out. And here we have a question that's going to bring us back to not even the glory days. I'm going to make an argument for the glory day, the pinnacle of social media. Yeah. Will Culbertson asks, when you first saw it, was the dress blue and black or white and gold? Mm. Jennifer, I'd love both your what colors you read the dresses and any memories or strong feelings you have about what color is the dress day.
It was shocking. It was a day I fondly remember because to me, I saw that photo and I'm like, it's white and gold. How could anybody? I like looked at that photo and I'm like, how could anybody see black and blue? I thought it was a joke. And scientists have since studied this phenomenon and why some people actually see blue and black versus white and gold. One study reported that individuals who saw the dress as white and gold showed increased activity in the frontal regions of the brain.
Oh.
These areas are thought to be critical in higher cognition activities such as top-down modulation and visual perception. So I'm happy that I am in the white and gold company because I don't. Did you guys see black and blue?
I'm a big dumby who saw blue and black. Yep.
I'm sorry.
I'm in the fog of ignorance because I was blue and black. And why are we having this conversation?
My very low activity frontal cortex was just like blue and black.
I was confirmation bias. I saw that in the Wikipedia and I was like, I will take that. Yes, no, that is accurate. That is accurate.
If no doubt. Do you remember that this was also the escaped llama day? It was like escaped llama in the morning here in Southern California. Gosh, and then the dress blew up in the afternoon. It wasn't just the glory of the dress. It was also escape llama day.
Escape llama.
Wait, yeah, I do remember that because it was. I'm also. What do you know? What year that was? I was
think 2015.
2015.
But I have a low activity frontal cortex, so I better look it up.
I'm sorry.
I've learned a lot about what Jennifer thinks about us. Okay.
But well, I think it wasn't also like. Dependent upon your computer as well. I saw some reports of that.
I mean, I'm looking at it now and I'm like, this is blue and black. This is
what?
2015. Yes. Wow. Yes. I thought it was
February 26th, 2015.
Okay.
I gotta look this up again. How could you see blue and black?
That's great.
It wasn't even close to me too. It wasn't like, you know, you'll get those like is this a silhouette of a man's face? There's actually a picture of the full body of a lady and they're like, oh, if I look at it this way, I can see both. I was like, I sat there and tried. Like, I can't nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Nothing's gonna make me see white and gold.
And I thought it was like 2010. 2015 is crazy. Yeah. I was the security director and sitting in the office and I remember just this exploding all day.
Yeah,
and I just couldn't
line to go to a museum with Sarah and her parents, and it's just like I don't want to be rude, but this is the best day on social media ever.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is hilarious. I want a larger story. Yeah, and the dress was actually black and blue, right? That was the That was the review.
It was.
So Jen, take all your highfalutin intelligence and your frontal lobes. How do you want to do with this dress now?
But here's the thing that's weird is that like I think people are also showing what it looks like if you adjust the whatever, and it looks very much blue and black in certain lights here.
It's all the day of that infamous Game of Thrones battle of Winterfell where everyone's like complaining it was too dark. I had not one problem with it because my TV by dumb luck was on the right settings. Everything.
Yeah. So so much of this is the settings and who I don't know the full history of if it was, you know, truly looked different on different screens or whatever. But to wrap up here, like obviously don't want to be too dark about the current state of social media. It deserves darkness. I just don't want to dwell on it. Do you think that this is a value of social media, Jennifer? Something that is on the surface just kind of really ridiculous, inconsequential, playful. But then if you want to dive into it, there's plenty to read about of perception and screen things, of like just this surface level fun that maybe even opens the door to education. Is this a vital part of social media that we're missing?
Yeah, because I think what it reminded me of is like the monoculture, I think is they call it. So like we kind of had that with Game of Thrones, where it was this water cooler moment where every week we would talk about it after it would air. You'd rush to Twitter online and maybe see the hot takes or whatever, right? Obviously, back in the day with Seinfeld and all these other shows. And so, and even in early days of social media, there would be these things that would go viral, like the cat playing the piano and like we're talking about the blue and black dress. And so it was a moment that united all these people together. And now I don't feel like we could even have that. Everything feels so niche. And what I'm seeing on TikTok is not what is going to be in your TikTok algorithm. And Twitter is a X. It just seems like a dumpster fire. So yeah, I feel like that was kind of the last moment that I can think of where we were all united.
How do you feel, Ken? Do you miss these sorts of events?
In a way, too. Yeah, I didn't overly compete in these ones. I should say compete like it was a game, but I do miss that. I miss the TV show thing a little bit, and we certainly have it, but it's fractured, right? So yeah, if you're watching Space Story TV show at midnight or six, whenever it's released, you have a little bit of it. It's just become an absolute dumpster fire. It's where a lot of my frustrations lie in some of these fandoms and communities, where it's just like, you're robbing the joy for me versus us coming together and not just loving the thing, but just getting the chance to celebrate it or be in it. You know what I mean? I don't mind the debate of it. But yeah, it's forever changed, and some of it's good, right? But look, it's actually interesting to me that this is late in the game, so to speak, 2015. There had already been some real serious things that had kind of played out online, including the some protests against police brutality in 2014 and stuff, the stuff in Missouri and everything that kind of exploded out. And so we were past a lot of the bigger things. It still seems like an innocent time. I don't know if we can go back to, but it'd be fun every once in a while, I think.
Yeah, I think for me it is. I think these kind of things are really fun where it is. I don't think anybody, well, I'm sure people have gotten to flame wars or that, but it felt fun and frivolous and, you know, we're really just joking around with one another. And it is massive water cooler. Or like, you know, I haven't deep dived on the llamas, but I think everybody ended up okay. And that was just like a bonkers thing that happened. And because we were all connected, we got to see it and experience it together. And I think that is, for me, I'm missing those kind of events, and I think they aren't happening as much because social media is so fractured into different pockets and with the collapse of the site formerly known as Twitter, it's just people are spread out everywhere, just literally. So I think without having a more centralized social media, it is harder for a beautiful llama dress day to happen.
Yeah, beautiful llama dress day.
My kingdom for a llama dress day on social media.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our cues of the other. We talked some serious stuff. We talked some fun stuff and some crossover of both. Ken, where can people find us and how can you read it dramatically so people keep listening?
On X, formerly known as Twitter. You can follow us at Force Center Pod. We are on Threads as well. We're on Instagram. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Our podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast, and more. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly, like so many that do, and we're thankful, at patreon.com/Force Center. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to kennapsok.com to link to other things I do, including at the time of this episode, and this will be a Thursday, so Friday, November 3rd, the first single from the band The Moonagers that I'm a part of called Tell Me, Tell Me, a song I co-wrote with Brian Tiller and Sean Arnold, will be released everywhere, but love to have you check it out on Bandcamp at themoonagers.bandcamp.com. Gigglesquad.com. There you go. That's part of my triangle. Passion, making money, maybe. Artistic integrity. It's all there.
It's a great triangle. I think possibly some triangle points converging, which is beautiful. Jennifer, how about you? Where can people find you? What are you up to?
You can find me trying to fix my triangle. That sounds bad. Anyways, you can see.
What
find me.
Spicy tamale we got here.
Spicy tamale. Yes, see me not being sexy on TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138 and YouTube and Instagram at Jennifer Landa for lots of weird retro things.
Love it.
That is great. I'm not going to be sexy in Mobile, Alabama at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. If you're listening, the day we release this, I'm probably in the air flying to Mobile, Alabama, November 3rd through the 5th. The short film I worked on, The Nightmare Adorable, is playing as a part of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. If you're in the area, come and check it out. All the information on when the film is showing is on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. That is it. We have answered the cues of the other.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.